All right, keeping on with the common sense theme, sometimes just having that conversation is common sense. Pick up that phone. You don't want to have it, but the more you think about it, it becomes fear, total lockup fear that this person is going to kill you. But when you have the conversation, it has always turned out to be okay.
It is human nature to assume the worst.
Yeah, I agree.
And more often than not, I have found that people don't suck as bad as I think they do.
Right?
Yeah.
And things always get worse when you delay. If you have a problem, you got to identify the problem and fix it. No. Not next week. Not tomorrow. No.
Yeah. Obviously, I agree with that 100%. I've done that in my company.
Who taught you that?
I'm not sure where it came from, but I'm gonna credit my mother.
She was good at that.
But it was have that now, because now is better than later, and later gets really bad.
There is sort of an exponential snowball hairball effect the longer you delay on delivering news.
Welcome to the Small Business Safari, where I help guide you to avoid those traps, pitfalls, and dangers that lurk when navigating the wild world of small business ownership. I'll share those gold nuggets of information and invite guests to help accelerate your ascent up that mountaintop of success. It's a jungle out there, and I want to help you traverse through the levels of owning your own business that can get you bogged down and distract you from achieving your own personal and professional goals. So strap in, adventure team, and let's take a ride through the safari and get you to the mountaintop.
Hello, everybody. It's Chris Nell again, the Small Business Safari. We're back. We're in studio, and we're just going to just riff and raff on a bunch of stuff. So let's get started with cheers, Alan.
Cheers.
It's been a minute.
Are you going to introduce your special guest?
I think we have to introduce our special guest.
Very special guest.
So we all have a mom and a dad, because that's how we got here. And in studio, I have one of them. So he's my mystery guest. Oh, shit. I already said it. So my dad's in studio with us. We call him Sammy Spreadsheet here at the Trusted Toolbox. My dad is the one who came down when I first started and said, let's go. I'm going to help you. And every time I talk with anybody and he'd go with me, he'd always say, well, here's what we're doing. Here's another thing. Here's what we're doing. I'm like, wait a minute. Who's doing what, buddy?
So I think your daughter must have taken something from Sam. Do better.
So that's from another episode where one night, Sydney, who is my dad's granddaughter, absolutely, she doesn't want to admit it, but she has the same personality traits. She said, Dad, what's for dinner? And I texted back, leftovers from last night. And she texted back, do better. Where'd she get that?
I have no idea.
I do.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, I've only known you, Sam, for an hour, but I think I know where that came from, too.
My dad, obviously I owe a lot to everything I've got from him. I had parents that were amazing. They helped me get to where I am today. We talked about success a lot on this podcast, and I'm excited to have my dad back in here in Atlanta in studio, because this is the first time he's been here since COVID hit. And we're going on now it's about 2.5 years since he's been in Atlanta. And because he got my truck, he says, is this new? I'm like, no, I had this thing for a year and a half. Oh my God, you guys haven't been here for 2 years. So it's exciting to have him back. Originally from Buffalo, New York, migrated to Jackson, Michigan, was a civil engineer. He's the reason I rebelled and became a mechanical engineer.
That's engineering revolution.
How'd I do? That's the best I could do.
You're a wild man.
Anarchy. Yeah. Anarchy. I was an anarchist.
You must have been so disappointed, Sam.
Not really. Mechanical engineers have a place in the world. We always need them. You got to have someone to blame.
You got to have somebody to flush the toilet.
How about that? Yeah. So a lot of people ask me, how did I get into this business? And why did I go from corporate America and make that leap to start my own business? And why did you pick home repairs? And I've said, well, I look back on all the things I like doing and my passions and what we did for vacations. I said, and one of the things I would say is that my first trip to Florida, my grandparents, my dad's parents at the time, moved down there. They were still at the time, but they moved down to Florida. And we got there, and the very first thing we had to do is my grandfather bought a duplex, of course, to make sure that he could offset the income with somebody else paying for him. Smart man. But when we got there, all we did was work on it. So my first trip to Florida, what I've told everybody is I didn't realize Florida had beaches. Your silence is compliant, Sam. Thank you.
They just had houses that needed a lot of repair in Florida.
That's what I thought.
You had the sun. You laid out and got tan.
I did on my lunch break. So then the next vacation that we took, you know, we had some great vacations, but that's why I told people, I said, I didn't realize vacations came without work. Because with my other grandfather, we had to build a ramp. With my grandmother, my grandfather's house, my grandmother was in a wheelchair. We had to do a lot of work on that. But probably the piece de resistance was we were going back to Buffalo, New York for Christmas to be with family. And my uncle.
How was the weather then?
I'm glad you asked. It's Buffalo, New York, and it's December. What does everybody imagine that weather's like?
Blizzard, whiteout.
It was all of that. And guess what we did? My uncle bought a piece of property on the top of a little mountain outside of Buffalo, New York.
Coal Road.
On Coal Road at the top, right in the middle of the snow effect of Lake Erie.
Lake effect snow.
Woof. And he said, good, Sam and Chris, you guys are here. I need you guys to rough plumb in my house. So here we go. We're up there. We're using our Sawzall. We got our Carhartts on. We're out there. We're Sawzall and cutting. We're roughing in plumbing. And it is just absolutely a whiteout. You can't imagine a whiter whiteout. In fact, there was so much ice on the wood that we were cutting, I'm pretty sure it was harder than the wood itself. And that's what we had to do. And that was my Christmas, was going there to rough plumb my uncle's house. So why did I get in this business? Because I look back on it fondly. I did. I enjoyed it. I learned a lot. We worked on the house all the time. It was fun. I went off and did the corporate America gig. And when I started really thinking about things that I was passionate about, I really liked things in houses. So I did it. So that's what we ended up doing. That's how I got into this business. So that was fun. And I'm to this day still having fun talking about people in their houses and doing different things. And thinking, thank God I am not working on Coal Road with my Carhartts on, with my eyes about to blister shut as I'm sawzalling and drilling through wood to run plumbing.
People here in Atlanta have no idea. I'm sure you had plenty of times where your eyelashes froze together and you had to take your hand out of your glove and pinch your fingers together on your eyelashes just so you
can get your eyes open.
That's exactly right.
Coal Road is probably the worst winter place in Buffalo.
Oh, so there's actually gradations of worse winter in Buffalo.
the drifts would get 14, 15 foot high. And you'd have to drive through them. And maybe if the snowplow made it up there, you might be lucky enough to follow.
He's not lying. The snow drifts, it was amazing. It'd blow in and you're like, hey, there's a road. And the snow would keep blowing and like, where'd the road go? We lost it. But that's how we grew up. That's what I did. And so I'm glad that I got Dad to come in here in the studio. He came in and said, what are we doing? And I said, don't worry, I'll tell you in a minute. And here we are. You're podcasting.
Well, first time.
And what do we like about podcasts? It's raw. It's authentic. We're gritty. We're irreverent. And this is not a polished show.
No. And we can edit whatever we want.
Yeah. And those comments and that feedback are coming from our listeners, by the way. And it's not a polished show. I think that's a compliment, but the guy said, no, I like it because, you know, I feel like I really get to know you. He came up to me in a conference that I was at last week and came up and started quoting some of the stuff
from really?
The podcast. It was super cool. It was the personal stuff. So he really felt like he had a connection with me. And again, I didn't feel like a rock star or an entertainer, but he knew a lot about you and me, Alan. And he said, I really enjoy driving in between jobs. He's a carpenter, remodeler, runs the business. He said, but I've learned some things and you guys are actually entertaining.
You really have listeners.
We really have listeners.
That is eye-opening.
Look at the disbelief on your father's face.
Right. So back to what did Tommy say? He wrote a book and his mom didn't even read it
right.
A couple of times ago. I'm like, yeah. My dad hasn't even listened to one episode of a podcast yet that I've done.
I've listened to one.
Oh, thanks, Dad. That's support. That's the support I've always got. Do better.
Do better.
Do better. It's in you.
It's there. He's believing in me. He just hasn't seen it come out yet.
So what are we talking about today, Chris?
What we're talking about today, why we brought my special guest in, I said, this is a great time to talk about this. We all have life. life is all around us. We have work life, we have personal life, and we just have life. And we could separate and talk about the four letters of life, and we could say also shit happens. And sometimes when shit happens in your life, you got to figure out how big is that pile and how can you get around it. And that's the thing, we'll talk about the personal aspects of this in a minute, but let's talk about when you have employees and they have life happen. And I'm going to use the word life, and you guys can all now put the poop emoji in your mind every time I say the word life. With my guys, over the years, they seem to have a lot of life outside of work. And what I mean by that is, on Monday morning, typically after the Super Bowl or after another big event, Monday, they seem to have a lot of life. My car didn't start. My battery was dead. My alarm didn't go off. My phone wasn't charged. I had to take my son to school today. My old lady's in the hospital. And then my personal favorites are my aunt died in New York. I didn't realize how many people were dying in New York until I started my business, but that's life.
People have a lot of grandmothers.
And a lot of, you know, this is that reminds me of the MASH episode where Klinger always trying to get out of MASH, trying to get out of his assignment and being over there. He would come in and he would say, "Colonel, I need to talk to you. It looks like my cousin is pregnant and I need to go back." And he goes, "Ah, yes. Let me look." And he pulls out the file. He goes, "Ah, yes. Mother dying, cousin pregnant. Here's my personal favorite. Mother dying, father dying, cousin pregnant, and has to go back for this." So yes, a lot of life seems to happen to these guys. But what really happens when really a true life event happens to one of these guys, there's a personality change and there's a lot of things that these guys can't overcome. And I say guys because I'm saying everybody.
Well, it's the same thing for a business owner.
Right.
I mean, and it's, you know, if you've got a good size operation. So if somebody's got a crisis, you can manage around it pretty well. But when you as a business owner have a crisis, that's a completely different ballgame. Because when you're in the corporate world, you just, you know, take a couple of days, you can take a week, you might take a leave of absence. And there's enough redundancy in the organization to carry you through. But when you've got your own business, and, you know, especially if you're an owner operator, that could be catastrophic.
It definitely could be catastrophic. I've had two big events personally happen to me in just a year's time that really put a stress on my company, but also showed the support and strength that I built by being ready for it. I wasn't necessarily always planning for it, but I definitely thought about that succession plan and how are you going to build redundancy in your own organization by giving people and empowering people to do things. Because it's hard to let go of everything, right? And you're letting go of everything as a small business owner. And it's happened to me, like I said, twice in literally 12 months where I've had to be out of my business for weeks at a time, and in one case, a month.
Well, as we're, you know, on the podcast, talking sometimes to people who are thinking about starting their business or they've just started their business, you and I have talked about exit strategy a lot. And that always seems so far off in the future, but really, this is kind of like mini exit strategy planning, because you need to think about how am I going to just be able to take a vacation, much less when life gives you a curveball, you're usually not expecting it and you need to be ready for it.
Well, you hit two things. One, you're going to take a vacation. Well, I have 2 months to plan, for that, because that's what we do. We put it all in place and we make all those big decisions, or we pay those big bills right before we go, knowing that we can take a week vacation and maybe completely unplug at one point, which I've actually been able to do years ago. For one whole week, I was overseas and my business ran. And when I came back, it wasn't in flames. It was smoldering a little bit, but it wasn't in flames. It made it. But I was able to plan for that for 2 months, preparing everybody for, well, how do you handle this? Or what if I do this? Or can I do that? You know, let's wait and we can delay some big decisions until you get back. But what you hit up is the, hey, this is happening and it's happening right now. I mean, and it happened at, for me, Memorial Day a year ago. My son unfortunately had a pretty big episode. And, you know, I share it's a personal thing, but it's really tough. But he was a very capable and confident young man. And something reared its ugly head and showed off. And I had to stay with him for a month straight. And I wasn't able to plan for it. And it, I couldn't just go back to work and tidy things up and make all those big decisions and go there. I had to be there. I had to be there for him and be there doing it. And now what do you do? you got it, the business has got to run, and you didn't have a chance to tell everybody what's going on. And so you got to, back to what you said, you got to have that disaster recovery idea, that exit strategy. But this, in this case, I would call this business disaster recovery. So Chris gets hit by a bus. What happens now? And playing through that, which I've done before this, actually had helped me figure out who I could empower to do what to run their business. And that was a big part of that. But it's also hard to think through because, one, it's personal. And you got to divorce yourself from that and get unemotional and then figure out what's going to happen. Two, you've got to get those people trained and feel like they're empowered and accountable to do that stuff while they're gone. You know, do I wait for Chris to come back to make this decision? Should I pay this bill? Should I collect this money? Yes, and yes. What would you do if you ran the business? But you can't, they don't think like you do unless you start training them.
But that is the process of elevating yourself from an owner-operator to an owner. And life crisis can force that, and hopefully it's not catastrophic. But maybe by somebody listening to this podcast, they might actually start thinking about it ahead of time, because stuff like that's going to happen, whether it's a personal tragedy or just, I mean, anything. And it goes back to as simple as wanting to take a vacation. But if you're starting a new business and all you're caring about is, hey, where's my next customer come from? How do I make payroll? You still need to be thinking bigger. You need to be thinking about scaling. You need to be thinking about exit strategy. You need to be thinking about redundancy, because stuff like that's going to happen. So, you know, Delta Airlines knows that they can overbook a plane because X amount of people aren't going to show up. You know, I mean, there's ways that you kind of plan for things based on what you know. So if you know on 2 out of 4 Mondays in a month that somebody's, you know, aunt is having a birthday in New York, then, you know, that's something that you need to actually, instead of going, oh crap, it happened again, start thinking about how do I plan for this when it comes to my staffing.
That's a good point on the staffing. One of the things that I worked on was my scheduler. You know, I'm the one who hires technicians in our company. I was the one who fires technicians in our company. And the thing that I had put in place just under a year before this, the big event happened for me, the first one, is I told her that ultimately, I want you to say yes. I want you to be part of the interview process. Now I have 2 other people who actually do all the interviewing. We're actually doing this podcast. Well, these guys are interviewing a new technician today, and I'm not even involved. And if they say yes, then I will help train him, and I will bring him in, and I'll onboard him, and I'll do all that. But they get to make the hiring decision. So not all hiring and firing decisions are made while I'm gone. I mean, were made while I was gone, I should say. They weren't until then. So they actually were able to, during this period, onboard 2 new guys and had to let go of 1 guy. In this world that we're in, that's, you got to make a decision quickly because your brand's important. They didn't wait for me. They wanted me to say what they were thinking was right, and usually what I said they were thinking was right. And that's a big piece, because what if you have one of these guys, they're afraid to hire and fire, so they let the guy go because, well, you know, Chris liked the guy, he's had a soft spot for the guy, he gave him an advance, he's given him a break in the past, I don't want Chris to come back and be ticked that I fired somebody that he really liked. I told him that, no, at the end of the day, they work for you as part of our company. They're the face of our company, but you have the ultimate decision for me. I'll help you, but I need you guys to make that call, because it's going to be your monkey that you have to have on your back.
Don't you remember, though, when you were early on in the corporate world, it was, and maybe it's one of the reasons you were successful, it was a point of pride that when your boss was gone, okay, it was your show. And, you know, in many ways, it ran better when the boss was gone, because you were given responsibility and you took the, yeah, you stepped up. And you can create that in a small business.
You can create that in a small business. It is hard, again, because you go back to it, because it's your baby. You've nurtured it. I talk about, you know, when my dad came down and helped me and said, we're doing this. And that sense of ownership and that only you have in the beginning, because nobody thinks like you. We talk this so often, as employees just don't think like you. But if you empower them and give them that step up opportunity, because everybody couldn't see that on the podcast, but I took my hands and I raised them up. We want to go up when we go up. You got to bring them up when they go. So they, when they do it, you can see the sense of pride they have, the sense of ownership they have, and they step up. And that's pretty cool to watch that happen and have that happen. Because you're right, a lot of people, once you see them do it and you sit back and watch, you're like, man, that's pretty cool.
And I think another thing that's important in this process, because it's going to happen, let's just go back to the vacation. Let's make it an easy thing. You take that big leap. You kind of check your emails a little bit. You try not to be 100% plugged in. And I think it's really important to do kind of a debrief when you come back. What worked? What didn't? Who do I need to train to do what so I can do this again? Or if a life stressor comes along, you know, the organization's going to run fine without you. So I guess what I'm saying is after you come back, instead of just jumping back in and fixing everything, take a minute to see what worked well and reward that and look for what didn't work so well and train towards that for the next time around.
I had a good point on that one. One of the big things was I'm the one who blesses payroll, right? Mm. Of course we do, because that's our biggest expense as business owners in the beginning for most of us, unless you have a big product line or inventory, then you're the purchasing agent. But let's go back to payroll. I was gone and they said, Chris, we're waiting for you to approve payroll. We're waiting for you to approve payroll. And I was on vacation. And I was on a boat and I may have been drinking and I couldn't approve payroll. And my number one at the time made the call and said, I'm approving payroll. Go. He can shoot me later, but I'm approving payroll.
And he was nervous about it, right?
He was. Yeah. And I came back and I said, you did the right thing. You know what? That's something we need to work on. So Chris got out of the payroll process and just says the final bless on the ultimate number, knowing that I've got one person that prepares, one person that checks, and one person who oversees and says, yes, that's correct. They're in, I'm out. All I do is look at the big number and go, can I make that happen? Oh boy. So now it works. But we did that. And now they feel empowered. I mean, we run payroll. We know how to do it. We actually just put a new payroll process in place. I let the two instrumental people do it. I came in and blessed it. I was supposed to be in a meeting, and typical to me and the way I run my life, I didn't really. I might have missed that one. Hmm. Oops.
Let's talk a little bit about customers during these times.
When things go right.
Yeah, so something happens, and the assumption is that your customers are going to start lighting the torches and sharpening. Have you found that if you're honest with them and upfront with them, and here's what happened, and if you had a good relationship, that they're actually pretty forgiving?
Yes, and a little no, but mostly yes. But yeah, I think, again, you're a small business owner. And when we get really ticked and you are a high D driver, not saying that they're in this room, but I am going to say their initials are Sam. Okay, yeah, me too. When you aren't getting satisfaction from a company, what do you want to go to? The owner.
Right.
All right. When's the last time you called the CEO of Delta? When's the last time you called the CEO of Ford or Chevy or GM, as it were? No.
No, you know you can't get to them.
And that makes me mad because they don't know who I am. Because
you're kind of a big deal.
Thank you. I'm kind of a big deal.
We all are.
We all, right. Thank you, Dad. Did you say I'm a big deal? That's what I heard. Son, take a little gratification.
Dad thinks I'm a big deal. That's right. When things don't go right, it's always your fault.
Damn it. I knew it'd come back. And that's how I was raised, Alan. But that's a different podcast with another counselor. But he's right. But with a smaller business, you think, oh my God, I got to get to the owner. Right?
Exactly.
So I got to get to the owner. You know what, Chris? I am mad. Here comes the pitchforks. I am mad. What's going on? They're just not doing it the way you used to do it. Okay, let me jump in. Let me un-F what's been F'd. give me a chance. Let me do this. You've raised it to me. Let me see what happens. And then what I have been doing lately is I don't solve the problem myself. I bring my team in and say, we are going to solve it like this. And then I can put, because there's a lot of times where they want me to fix it. Well, I can't fix it. You know, I can't do the drywall better than that guy. I can't put the ceiling fan better than that guy, but I can get the right guy to it. And I know, again, there's a reason I got into this world and and that's working on houses and not in anything that's involving people's lives, because I know everything we're doing can be fixed. It's drywall, it's paint, it's wood. I'll fix it.
But getting back to the customers, other than the people who maybe were with you when you were brand new and you were the estimator and you might have actually slapped a little mud on the wall, I don't think people necessarily immediately think they have to call the owner if they've got a problem. They just need to know somebody's going to take care of it. So if it could be two or three levels below you, if that person looks at the customer and says, you know, I'm sorry this happened, I'm going to take good care of you, don't worry about it, I'm sorry, you know, then it never even needs to get to you. But my original point was, when you've got these life stressors, since that's our topic, sometimes you know they're coming, sometimes you don't. So you can schedule around a vacation, like you said, but you get hit with a curveball and you've got to be out. Don't you think that some proactive phone calls to whoever you had, like my biggest pet peeve is, you know, have an appointment with somebody and then they don't show up. And then you call them and then they give you some excuse. But if you got a call ahead of time, here's what happened, you know, can we move it to next Monday? I would say 90%+ of people are probably pretty cool, don't you think?
Always. Never have I had a call where I called and said, look, I can't make it this Friday. I have to be out of town because of this very important personal event. And I'm not making an excuse. If I just say it, I don't even have to give the reason. I have never once had somebody scream at me and say, I can't believe you called me ahead of schedule. And I can't believe you're not going to hold your commitment. They're all like, absolutely, let's change it. I definitely want to wait and see you, because I'll give them the option. Either you can wait and see me, or I can try to see if I can get somebody else from my company out to look at that. And a lot of times with those two options, the anxiety comes down. We don't like it as the customer, but at least the guy gave us options. Not doing it though, that's holy hell. Mm-hmm. That is. And why don't we do that? Because that's conflict. Right? I just called you and said, I can't make it. Well, that's a conflict, right? I've now just gone to do battle. And then, but why did I avoid it? Well, because sometimes the conflict and the fear of conflict is worse than the conflict itself. Because when I pick up that phone, I've never once had somebody yell at me. They always go, I understand.
But the whole time you're thinking, every time you make that call, oh, they're going to be upset.
In my head, I built up that the big ogre is going to come out of the molten earth and just absolutely slam me with the hand of God. Woof.
And I think customer service sucks so bad in this country right now that it's not a conflict to me. If you were to call me and tell me that, I'd be like, wow, that's, you know, kind of a bummer that he's not going to be here on Friday, but I really appreciate being told ahead of time, because,
you know, that's just basic common sense.
Yeah. Respect. Yes.
We all want that.
Well, what's common sense, though? It's not common. but you know, having to have that conflict, he calls it common sense because that's the way he was raised and that's the way he raised me, is you say what you're going to do and you do what you say. And if you can't do it, you let them know you can't do it. And this is why.
Well, common sense is still common sense. It's just not common that people have common sense.
We got a lot of commons in there.
Yeah. It's like right and wrong is still right and wrong. People don't know it. Was that a beer rattling I heard?
I think we need another beer.
I think so too.
All right, keeping on with the common sense theme. Sometimes just having that conversation is common sense. Pick up that phone. You don't want to have it, but the more you think about it, it becomes fear. Total lockup fear that this person is going to kill you. But when you have the conversation, it has always turned out to be okay.
It is human nature to assume the worst.
Yeah, I agree.
And more often than not, I have found that people don't suck as bad as I think they do.
Right?
Yeah.
And things always get worse when you delay. If you have a problem, you got to identify the problem and fix it. No. Not next week. Not tomorrow. No.
Yeah. Obviously, I agree with that 100%. I've done that in my company.
Who taught you that?
I'm not sure where it came from, but I'm gonna credit my mother.
She was good at that.
But it was have that now, because now is better than later, and later gets really bad.
There is sort of an exponential snowball hairball effect the longer you delay on delivering news.
I think anybody who hops on the, I'm going to get angry because you called me to tell me you're not going to do something early, they're way off. And I would say, I would say they're not out there right now, at least in the customers. I can't think of one time, like I said, when anybody's ever yelled at me that way. But I have definitely heard it when somebody did not get back with them. Mm-hmm. Right? They didn't get back with me. All I wanted was a simple phone call. How many times have I heard this? Thank you for just calling me.
It is such a horrible thing to hear because it's just the state of affairs today that people are actually blown away because, ooh, you responded to an email or a phone call. I mean, going back to what you said, I mean, it's just common sense. It's what you're supposed to do. But the way I look at it and what I tell my kids is it's even easier today to stand out from your competitors.
It is easier to stand out. But going back to that human condition, what do? We always run from fear or we run from pain. And having that phone call is painful. Wouldn't you rather run to joy and comfort? Yes. So that's why
when but you line up. It's not as painful as you think.
It's just never as painful as you think. And I think I look back and as you guys are talking about this, I kept thinking back every time I delayed that phone call to be like at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, my whole day was me thinking about how bad that phone call was going to go. And if I just would have made that phone call at 8:30 in the morning and realizing it just wasn't that bad, I would have had a lot better day.
It's over and done with.
Over and done with. Yep. Just getting back with people. It also reminds me of time. The first time I went to SunTrust, in my first 90 days there, I came in at 100-day plan. I said, I'm going to come in and I'm going to fix this group that had been known for being really bad at what they did. And they were the consumer loan doc people. And I came in and I told everybody I was coming in and I did my thing. I said, hey, if you've got a problem, you just let me know. And that went to all of the people we served at the executive level. What they did is they turned around and sent that email to everybody below them and then below them and below them and below them. I'm sitting in Atlanta, Georgia. I got 400 people docking loans. I don't even know how to dock a loan to begin with, especially commercial loans. And I'm getting emails from commercial bankers in Albany, Georgia, Tifton, Georgia, Brunswick, Georgia. I don't even know where these cities are. And they're sending me these emails. Your guys did this. Your guys did this. These guys screwed this up. And I finally looked at what was going on. And how did I get to myself fixed? I brought in audit, which in, if you know anything about banking, when the audit team comes into your organization, you are in a world of hell.
That's a sphincter tightening moment.
I called them in to come audit my group. And I had to go through it.
Self-audit.
Oh, my God. That, talk about pain. It was not only was it painful, but I did it. And they came back and their audit finding was, one of the many, was the number one problem solver in your organization is you. I'm like, I don't even know how to dock a loan. How am I going to solve that problem? I need help. And so we ended up having to put in these escalation procedures and then really did a revamp and a reorganization. It did not turn overnight. I can promise you that. I still was getting these emails from Tallahassee, Florida, Miami, Florida. You've all heard of these, but it gets even better, you know, than there's Statham, Georgia. I don't even know where that place is still, but I got an email from this guy. Right. Still don't like it. Only because that guy sent me the email telling me how bad my guys were. But I had to get myself out of it. How did you do it? You had to start empowering and moving the authority down level to the people who really can make it happen and let them know that this is common sense. Common sense is do your job. And when you don't do your job, communicate why you didn't do your job. And if those guys are giving you, and what I kept hearing from my people was that they weren't getting all the information and the commercial bankers, believe it or not, were just out there selling things without getting them all the real information they needed. And so I came back and said, well, have you told them what you need? Well, of course they know what's needed. I said, have you told them what they need? And what we found out was not only did the commercial bankers not know they needed a few more documents, they needed a few more ratios to be run before they could get the loan doc and a few more signatures. So we came up with an input form or a checklist of everything they had to have for us to be able to dock the loan.
Checklists always work wonders. Always.
Checklists always work wonders.
They're a substitute for common sense.
I think it forces in. I think it forces people to fall into what we would consider common sense.
It forces you to think in some sort of a logical pattern so that you repeat what you're doing every time. The stuff that doesn't work gets eliminated. The stuff that does work gets amplified.
I like it. That's true. It does. It
gold nugget from Sam.
Wow. Mark it down, everybody. Small Business Safari, you are now getting what I got as a kid.
I think one of the keys, though, if you were the one solving all the problems and you want to push it downhill, it's not like you're trying to avoid the problem, but there's a lot of reasons why it's better for the first line of defense to actually handle a problem, because then there's the second line of defense and so on and so forth until it gets to you. And every line of defense actually costs more money to solve the problem. And the key for you, though, is to make sure that you give people the parameters, the box that they can work in to solve problems. And if they make a decision, to not punish them for making a decision because you've told them to make a decision, but use it as a training moment. So as opposed to, what the heck did you do that for? You know, you can't do that because then they're going to be afraid to make another decision and your phone's going to keep ringing. But to just make sure, hey, thank you for taking care of this. You know, let's think through it. Can you think of some other ways that we could have done this better? You know, here's what happened. If you had to do it over again, can you do it a different way? I mean, it's a way to turn it into a training moment.
You said two things I want to hit back on. It's a training moment, which is hard to think through. One, as a leader, you have to think about what is the outcome you want. Is the outcome you want is that they feel defeated and they feel less about their job and they're willing to do less. And they're just like, woe is me. I got to come in again so my boss can tell everybody how bad I am. No. What is the outcome you want? You want them to be able to solve the problem. And if you can't give them the tools, give them an outlet. You can only solve a certain set of problems at one level, and then you go to the second level. What we found out back in my banking days, which I actually brought to my own company, was where is it best to solve that problem? Well, first off, don't screw up. Second, have a good process and a checklist. When something does get screwed up, who's the next best person to do it? Probably that person's supervisor, not some guy sitting in Atlanta eight levels up to has to bring it all the way back down to this guy. And we put that in place in my company. The best place to solve the problem is probably my operations manager, because not only does he know more about me and what it takes to fix something in a home, he is closer to it. And he might be able to get the guy on the field in the field to make the change while we're there. And guess what happens? It gets fixed. The customer's happy and we got it all taken care of. Instead of them saying, no, I got to go all the way to the owner, who's then going to go down through the operations manager, and then the scheduler's got to get the handyman back out there, and then we got to get this thing fixed. By pushing it down and giving them the authority and the accountability, it actually alleviates, and we've actually gotten in my small business world of home repair, we actually have gotten good reviews because something went wrong originally, and our guys fixed it right away because the customer knew that our guys were behind them. Our operations manager was the right person to talk to first.
Sometimes it takes screwing up to actually make a truly loyal customer, because if it's just an easy transaction and they come and go, you didn't really have a chance to impress people. But people get impressed when something goes wrong. And I'm sure in home repair, things can go wrong. Even if you didn't do anything wrong, they can just go wrong.
Some of our best customers are customers that we had problems with.
Yeah.
And we went back and fixed it.
Yep.
We did right. The customer was happy, and we still have those customers today.
Yeah. I tell this one guy is working with a bank that I'm not really fond of, coming from the banking world. And I said, man, dude, you got to switch. He said, I will never switch. He said, because 30 years ago, I had a problem, and I went in, and this supervisor on the teller platform fixed my problem. And it was a big problem. And it was me having a big check bounce because they put the money in the wrong spot. He said, but she made it right. And I said, from then on, I will always stay with that bank. And so today he still stays with that bank because of that lady doing what she did 30 years ago. Crazy, right?
Cool story. So if you were a small business owner operator, but maybe you've got a little handful of people on staff and you're creating a mini exit strategy just so you can take a vacation. But that same mini exit strategy can be employed if a very difficult life, you know, happens. What are some of the things that you need to think about? You already talked about one, you know, who's released an approving payroll.
How do you do that? How do you get there? I would say start small. on a Friday afternoon, I'm not going to be here. I need these decisions made. Or here's a problem I've got. You go solve it. And when somebody brings you back, hey, I need this problem solved, and you turn it back around and say, how would you fix it? You know what? I agree with you. Going forward, why don't you make all those decisions? Up to a certain amount of either giving somebody the money back or coming back and giving them a little extra service. Try it out on a small basis to see if they'll step up and move into it. Because you can't just dump, hey, go authorize payroll.
Right.
Can't do that. But you can say, let's look at this and say, okay, why did you do that? Why did you give this guy an advance? Why did you deduct on this guy? Because, well, he did this. I'm like, you know what? I agree with you. So what did I just do? I just told them they did the right thing. Now they're learning those behaviors that they'll take with them that you would do without you being there. So start small with small little things, and then can grow into an afternoon and then 2 days. And then maybe you go to a conference or you're out of pocket for 3 days, and then it grows into a full week.
But I think there's actually a step before that.
So you're saying I failed the test?
No. You actually just advanced. You didn't read the first page. You just jumped to the final.
Damn it.
So the question is in an average week, what are the things that you do that only you do that everybody else just assumes that you're doing, and it won't get done unless you do it?
You're right. I jumped to the final. So what did I do? I was actually started writing down everything I was doing every day, or journaling. Ooh, that's a big word.
Making a list.
I made a list.
Huh. Chris, you're very procedural. Where did that come from?
I don't know. I think I picked it up on my own. Oh, shit, he's in the room with me.
You might get smacked in the head.
Won't be the first time. Whoa, actually, we talked about that. He never hit me. The threat of the hit,
yeah.
The fear of the conflict was all I needed.
So the things that you do throughout the week.
Yeah, I started to write down each and everything I did every day. And started to see common patterns, and started to see, you know, how my day was laid out, but the things I was doing, you know, I was, and that's how I was able to build my org chart. I had the org chart, but who could do what? You know, I'd wake up in the morning, I'd make sure all my guys were scheduled and going out to do jobs. I would check all the messages from the night before to make sure that all the jobs were still going to go, and customer didn't decide to call at 8 o'clock at night and cancel. Believe it or not, that does happen because life happens. Then the next thing I would do is wait for the lady to come into the office, start answering the phones, and I'd take off and go do estimates. And I would come back, I would write estimates. Then I would go check on jobs, do quality assurance. Then I'd come back and I would start laying out the next day. That was Monday. All right. And then Thursday, once a week, I would start working on payroll. So all those things is what helped me change a lot of things. So I've gone to a biweekly payroll process, which we've had now for years. You're like, oh my God, in your world, how can you possibly go without paying guys every week? I'm doing it. It's crazy because a lot of other companies are not doing that. These guys need to be paid weekly. Not if they budget, not if you train them on how to finance and look at their budget and look at things. And now I only run payroll every 2 weeks. Not bad.
No, that's awesome.
Not only is it awesome to help our business, it helps all the people that work for us too.
How so?
Because now they're budgeting and they understand what they've got to do, what they can and can't do.
Yeah, so you get them thinking more than just every week. All I got to do is make it to Friday, man. That's beer day.
I got to get a budget for 2 weeks of beer days.
Right. Yeah. So I got a budget for not only this Friday, but next Friday. Ooh, maybe I'm only going to get a 12-pack tonight.
So another thing that you have to do is if you don't have a true second in command, you have to appoint somebody to be second in command. And there could be a couple of different seconds in command. You know, while I'm gone, you're in charge of all customer relations. While I'm gone, somebody else could be in charge of all employee situations. It just depends on who has the aptitude and the respect of the rest of the people.
I found that to be a careful, slippery slope.
All slopes are slippery.
This one could be really slippery. Because if you give the wrong person a little bit too much authority while you're gone, and you walk back in,
Napoleon
has taken over, and next thing you know, he's running to Russia, trying to split Russia in two, and taking them through the winter. But no, a little historical reference for you, but you got to watch it. Because that person takes off, and next thing you know, you walk back in, and your office is empty. And you're like, where'd my office go? Well, it's down with Napoleon. And Napoleon's on there running everything, and everybody else is running in fear and cowering, afraid to tell you anything. I think when you do that, you got to start helping them make some decisions early. And then I've done this one. How did I get myself out of the problem solving? Well, have you talked to the operations manager yet? Well, no, I thought I'd just come right to you first. Well, I just got this call. This customer's really mad, and you need to handle this. I said, well, have you talked to them? Well, no, you're the owner. Well, we'll talk to them first, and then I'll get involved. And then behind the scenes, I go talk to the operations manager and say, hey, when you get this issue, bring it to me and let's figure out, you know, just tell me what you're thinking and let's see if it's the right thing. All right, let's handle it like this. And then you help and you coach him and you guide him and you tell him, hey, fix it like this. And then the person who called you in your company, your CSR or first level person, starts to realize and get builds confidence in the operations manager. And now they just go to him. And he'll come and he'll know, hey, I'm running into a sticky one again. Can you help me with this? How would you handle that? And that's how it worked well, is by helping people and empowering people to step up.
Yeah, it's going from owner operator to owner.
Yeah, that's exactly how you got to be thinking about it. Owner operator to owner. And then how do you get them to be as invested as you? Well, nobody's ever going to be there. Well, they kind of will if you give them the step up opportunity.
And it's hard sometimes to give that up, because I think as leaders, you get that little shot of dopamine in your head every time somebody asks you a question, because you at that moment know they don't know and I do.
And it feeds the ego.
That's exactly right.
Let me tell you how smart I am, because I started this business. I've seen this thing. I've been in over 14,000 houses and I know everything about everything when it comes up. No, can't do it. You got to stop yourself.
And you start off with the small little company and you stay that small little company because you haven't grown anybody. You haven't grown your people. You haven't grown your business. You haven't grown yourself. You just stuck.
Amen. You just created your own fishbowl that you'll never grow out of.
Preach on, Preacher Sam.
That's right.
That's right. Because you just created your own fishbowl.
You grow the business, you got to grow everybody that works with you and helps you.
You're in the people business. I had somebody say you can never show it on ROI, but I promise you, if you grow your people, your ROI, your profitability will be better. And if you could measure that investment of your time to making money.
And that same thing works in big corporate life. I mean, when we went out to Washington State 40 years ago, and I was running this project with which we had no idea what we were doing, and you empower the people to do the work and you challenge them to do what they know they can do best, it helps.
For the record, I was 3 then, 40 years ago.
No,
you weren't. Oh, damn it.
But speaking of which, when he was 3, what kind of a kid was Chris?
3? I don't remember that far back.
Just in general.
His mom took care of him.
Thank God.
So when he was in school and he got into sports, and that's when I took over.
There you go. Okay.
You commit, you say what you're going to do, and then you do it. You never quit.
Yeah, that's definitely one thing my dad instilled in me is every sport. He said, you're going to start, and then you will finish. You're not allowed to quit.
Yeah.
And so that's why that's definitely something that's stick to me. Stuck with me is that stick-to-itiveness that you have to have as an entrepreneur, because you're going to have those down days. You're going to have that curveball. That's where we started this podcast, thrown at you. And it is easy, easy to go sit in the corner and just say, if I ignore it, it'll go away. Because I'm running away from pain. I'm not using my common sense anymore. But if you stick through it and just get through it and use a checklist, you actually can dig yourself out of it. And I've used that line so many times in our company with any job that we have or anything we have. When life happens, fall back on that checklist. The only way I've ever seen anybody get out of a problem or an overloaded situation or a life event that's happened is to sit there, make the list, and work through the list and get through it, because the sun will rise tomorrow. The sun will set tomorrow. The sun will rise again in 2 days. You've got to get there. And to do that, you've got to take care of the pain points and the issues in front of you today.
Let's talk about when you have a longer term situation. So you mentioned, you don't want to get into details, but the issue with your son kept you up for, you were a month?
It was a month. Yeah. I was out of my business for a month. What happened with my son?
And mentally?
Unable to talk to anybody because of what was going on. Could only text message and communicate through text or talk to text, but I couldn't talk verbally.
And even if he did show up, your head wasn't here.
Not even close.
So all those things that we just talked about already need to be in place, but for you to keep tabs on your business, because every once in a while you come up for air, you know, what were the what were the KPIs that, or what, you know, there's got to be a 6 or 10 things that you just kind of can keep an eye on just to make sure things are operating relatively smooth.
Yeah, number one, the checking account. Make sure that there's enough cash there, right? Yeah, well, you asked for one. That's one. Captain Obvious says, check your checking account. Two, I did have a KPI report developed, so I was able to see that on a weekly basis to see where we were trending.
What was on it?
So what's on there are number of leads we received this week or the past week, number of estimates we went on and estimates we wrote, number of wins on the estimator side, number of jobs completed, dollar amounts of estimates and dollars completed. And those were the ones that told me, okay, now we're running. I got that. I didn't have a great profitability report on a weekly basis. We're still working on getting that developed. So that was hard for me to watch. And that's where I said checking account first, because that would tell me how we're doing on collections. Because that's the collections number will be the next one.
Right.
I haven't been involved in the business for the last 5-6 years. But those are the same key performance indicators we developed in year 4, I think.
You're exactly right. I haven't changed those. And with my personality type and my ability to flitter all about as a hummingbird, I'm very proud of myself of not changing those over the last 10 years.
It's very indicative of what the troubles we had when we first started. The first 4 years, the business was up and down and sideways and had no idea what the hell we were doing. And we learned, went through our mistakes.
What were some of the big things that you saw just kind of being involved but not here every day? What were some of the significant things that...
It was a lot easier not being involved than coming back and look and see what happened between this and the last time I was here.
Yeah.
And I can look at it and I can say, okay, back then we were doing a lot of mailers. We had no idea how to get our brand out to the people and get them to say, I want to do work with the Trusted Toolbox. And so we did all this mailing stuff. And all of a sudden it dawned on us, that's not working. We aren't getting leads from this. We used to advertise in Church Bulletins. And I can tell you, in one hand, the number of leads we got from Church Bulletins. Holy Jesus, stuff that didn't work was monumental.
Right.
I mean, it took us a long time to understand that and to develop it, to change it. The way we pay technicians.
Yeah, you mentioned that earlier.
To me, that's the biggest problem we overcame. And it took us 5 years.
Yeah, I agree. That was a lot of learning in the beginning. We talked to a guy at a number of episodes ago, the Temple of Ted. And Ted talked about today's world. We're going to get Ted back. And I think we might have to get Sam back.
Yeah.
So, but I'll just ratchet that up. But Sam, my dad, is talking about is that in the beginning, you had to wait a long time to figure out what you're screwing up, especially when it came to advertising. In today's world, you ought to be able to look a lot quicker and react a lot quicker. And actually, from Ted's advice, one of the earlier episodes, I was actually able to implement that this year. And his advice actually helped me save thousands of dollars because I saw...
Was it how long you let it run before you made a decision or the A-B testing? We talked about...
Right. So what he talked about is in digital marketing, you can put out pay-per-click ads. These ads will have a certain keywords in them, and it's the A-B testing is what we did.
Yeah.
We put them out there and we saw which ones were working, and then we saw which ones weren't working. I was able to change it and then move it around and get more leads that way until we got through to the spring season where we really don't need as many leads. So I actually have turned down the pay-per-click. But his strategy was right. And what Dad's talking about was in the beginning, you just didn't have that. And you had to go honestly invest, waste, learn, but pay ultimately to learn that you didn't get those leads.
It had a secondary benefit is that when we started paying things the right way, we actually got the technicians involved in the jobs. They wanted to get them done quicker, so they got paid quicker. And that makes everybody happy. The client's happy, you're happy, they're happy. It worked wonders.
Yeah, what he's talking about is we changed from an hourly model to a commission-based model for our employees. And we put it on a merit-based program as opposed to a time program. And what do I mean by that? Well, if you work 40 hours a week and you're a maintenance man at a Courtyard for Marriott or a university that might be around the Atlanta area, with their initials may be GT or UGA, But continuing on, these guys are all sitting down there in the hourly model. If all three of us are on the hourly model and Sam runs more work tickets than Alan and Chris does, guess who gets paid the same? All of us. In our world, the more you
that
work.
That sounds like socialism, Chris.
Yes, and we don't believe in that here.
No.
We believe in the merit-based capitalistic society. So the more you do here at the Trust Toolbox, the more you make. And that's where, in the beginning, it was tough to explain. But now our guys who opt into our program know that they can do very well for themselves as long as they apply themselves. And they love that.
But the secondary benefit of that, too, is that the client is much happier.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. All the work got done quicker, faster, better.
I would say cheaper. That's the primary benefit.
That was great.
Yeah.
That brings back the customers, repeat customers. All right. We've been going on and on. We brought my dad into the studio, but I think we got to put a bow on this one. And we'll see if maybe wink, wink, nudge, nudge, we can have him stay here and come back for another one. So we might have him back as a repeat guest. But until then, keep on reaching to the mountaintop of success. Run up that mountain, make it happen. Hopefully we drop some gold nuggets for you. Go out and check us out, the Small Business Safari Podcast. You can find us at the Small Business Safari, that's safaripodcast.com, Small Business Safari, and any podcast you're out there, go out there and take a look. Check me out on Instagram, it's thecustomerservice.freak, or on TikTok, as Alan so famously brings up. That's right, thecustomerservice.freak. And if you want to go check us out on a more boring platform, you can go check me out on LinkedIn, where I keep it professional, I keep it above board. But if you want to see where the real me is, check me out on Instagram. Until next time, everybody, we'll see you.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Small Business Safari. Don't forget to go out and rate, review, and follow me. And if you like this episode, go out and check out my other episodes or check out my Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn for other great content. And remember, your positive attitude will help you achieve your higher altitude in the wild world of small business ownership. Until next time, make it a great day, Adventure Team.